Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it, just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is, When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way. Your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he would.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week. 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
I want to tell you about the first time I was 21 years old and I saw $6 million of cash right in front of me. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That's what $6 million looks like? Insane. How the hell can I get this kind of money one day? And the guy who had the $6 million was a Jewish businessman who owned dealerships in San Fernando Valley area. And he gave me an advice at 21 that completely changed the way I do business till today. By the way, if you get value from today's message, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. Here's what this Jewish businessman told me. I said, how is it possible you got this much money and you're in your mid-30s, $6 million cash? He says, Patrick, there's one thing you need to know about Jews. I said, what's that? When one makes money, five make money. I said, what? He says, when one of us makes money in a business, five other Jews make money because we like to make money in groups. I said, so what's the benefit of that? He said, everybody keeps doing business together. He says, too many people, ethnicities, nationalities, cultures, backgrounds, they just want to be the one making money. They don't want anybody else around them making money. And then eventually they wonder, how come nobody wants to go into business with me? Because when you make money, nobody else makes money. So ask yourself the question. Number one, the person you're working for, does he make money and do you make money? And number two, the people that work with you, who report to you, if they give their best, do they also make good money the way you're making money? If the answer is yes, you're in a great place. Go do your part, and eventually you'll make your money like that Jewish mentor shared with this 21-year-old 24 years ago, 23 years ago. If you got value from this video, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. And if you've never watched the video, 20 Rules of Money, How Actually Money Works, click here to watch the video, 20 Rules of Money. Take care, everybody.
Hey, everybody. Eddie Bales here, and I'm excited. I want to share something with you that I reread a book that I read in the past. It's a book called The Jewish Phenomenon. I heard about it lots of different times from different leaders that I follow, and I said, let me check this book out. Sounds interesting, because I've noticed, you know, maybe you've noticed that, you know, the Jewish community tends to be very prosperous, very wealthy, if that makes sense. And if you want to do what someone else is doing, hey, the best thing to do is to do it, to duplicate and replicate what they're doing, and you can have the same success. So you know, some of you guys may catch this on the replay. I'm going to, you know, start providing some value for you. And if you get value, then just give me some likes, give me some shares, give me some comments if you want to get some feedback. But, you know, today I'm going to share with you a little bit out of this book called The Jewish Phenomenon. And one of the things it says is seven keys to the enduring wealth of a people, right? So not just wealth for one person, but wealth for a group of people, right? And so maybe you want your family to create a legacy of wealth. I know that's something that I'm looking to break right now, and it is going to happen. It is happening. It's already happening right now, so I'm really excited about it. But let's just jump right in. I'm actually only going to share just two things, actually, out of the seven, because I don't want to keep you guys all day. But I wanted to share two things, really, that I thought were very, very impactful. Number one is one of their philosophies is they're really, really, really big on education. Like, being a lifelong learner, you can see all these books here in the bookshelf here. I'm obviously a big reader, right? And that's just one bookshelf in my office. I got several. But so, you know, being a lifelong learner, like someone who is always looking to learn and grow, you know, that's one thing that they stress from a baby to in the Jewish community is you are going to get the best education possible. Because, see, if you know better, you do better. And when you have more education, not only do you put yourself in better environments, but you also become a better person, obviously, just from the information and the knowledge and the training that you're getting. So, you know, education, one thing I thought that was pretty profound, let me just look at my notes here, is that it says, build your child's self-esteem. And that is huge, right? Because, you know, if a child tends to have a lower self-esteem as a child, then they tend to grow up with that and carry that low self-esteem, right? And so what's in the Jewish community, they actually start from at birth, and they start pushing them in situations where they're constantly around people and they're speaking in front of people, they're speaking in front of audience. They just give them opportunities where they can develop and grow their growth as a child, right? So education is huge. It's very, 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 very important. Let me show you something else that it said. It said, develop and demonstrate informed and literate habits, meaning that obviously you could read, but you become a person that can demonstrate as a speaker maybe, or as a you know, just somebody who's putting themselves out there in the community. So, and then the other thing it says is that they create the education expectation. So the expectation is you're going to get as much knowledge as possible. You're going to go to school. You're going to go to college. You're going to go to further your education, because that is just what they do, right? So that's a big one, is education, right? Matter of fact, there's a statistic that I don't have the statistic handy, but there's a statistic that says that, oh, thanks for the likes. There's a statistic that says that, you know, when you have a certain education, you're going to get a certain level of income. And when you raise that education to another form, you're going to get another level of income. So the more income, the more education you have, the more your income is going to go up, if that kind of makes sense. The second thing that it went over that I thought was really, really big is they teach their children to be professionals. So you're either going to be a doctor, a lawyer, or a business person. So you're going to be some type of professional. Even if you're not a doctor or a lawyer, you're going to have some type of, you're going to be a professional, if that makes sense. And one of the things I thought was really, really powerful is it even said in the book, by the way, the book, The Jewish Phenomenon, really, really good book. But it said that even if you're a professional, your goal is to be that professional. But part-time, after that, your goal is to move into entrepreneurship, right? Because they said, oh, here's another one, a big one. I don't want to go through all my notes, but I'm just excited, if you can't tell, right? Hey, Pastor Parker, good to see you here. But one of the things that it said is, oh, this one was right, this was huge. It said, if you are not an owner, you are an outsider. If you're not an owner, you're an outsider. I thought that was critical, right? Because that what that's saying to me is that they want you not just to work for somebody. There's another thing it said in the book, and I'll put my book down. It said that you rarely find someone in the Jewish community that works with their hands, if that makes sense, unless they're a surgeon or something of that nature. But they typically have the mindset of, I'm going to be a professional. I'm going to be a manager. I'm going to be a supervisor. I'm going to be someone at the top. And there's nothing wrong with thinking that way, because their parents teach them that growing up, right? So as they grow up, this is just the way they are, right? And it's no wonder why they seem to excel in everything that they do, is because that's how they're taught. So, you know, why am I sharing this with you guys? Because I want your culture to be that as well. It's not something that's set apart just for the Jews. This is set apart for all of us. And that's why this book is so powerful, because if we all start to adopt those values that they have, of course, some of those things are, you know, not overspending, and some of those things are, you know, investing and things like that. But some of these habits, if we just start to adopt some of those habits, we can put ourselves in a situation where not just we become successful, but our whole legacy, our whole tree. It only took one Winfrey to change the whole one Oprah to change the whole Winfrey tree, right? one Jordan to change a whole Michael Jordan tree, if that makes sense. So we could be the one that completely changes our entire legacy if we start to adapt these things and then start to turn around, not just keep it for ourselves, but start turning it around and teaching others. And that's why I wanted to do this quick video, even though I'm not a video person, so bear with me, guys. But I'm going to start doing some more videos because I've learned a lot of things and I've grown in a lot of ways. And I just want to start imparting some of the knowledge and the wisdom that I've learned and just start teaching other people. So the two things that the Jewish community really stressed out of the seven, there's seven things, I'm not going to go over all seven, but the two things that I want to stress today is knowledge and education. And so one of the things that I teach people that are around me is read 10 pages of a good book every day, right? Read 10 pages because, look, if you read 10 pages every single day for 30 days, that's 300 pages. You at least read a book a month. And if you read a book a month, after 12 months, you've read 12 books, right? And if you've read 12 books, you've done more than the average person because the average person never reads a book after high school, right? Seriously, right? And so you just set yourself apart from everyone else simply because you decided to just do a simple mundane task of reading 10 books, I'm sorry, 10 pages every single day. So that's one thing. And then the second thing is they're really keen on professional. Being a professional, but moving into an entrepreneurship type of a role. So I'm not going to go through the whole book, but it says something about even after work, if you're working a job, you're moving yourself in a position where you're doing something entrepreneurial, right? And by the way, you know, for those of you who are looking and paying attention and you're looking for some type of an entrepreneurship that you'd like to get involved with that doesn't take a lot of time, feel free to reach out to me, and I love to help you with that. Love to maybe have a conversation with you on that. But listen, guys, I just appreciate you guys for just tuning in just for a little bit. I'm going to share more. If you like this, let me know, and then maybe I'll share more stuff. Continue to like, continue to comment, continue to share. Good to see you. For those of you who are on, Pastor Parker and Tanya, it's definitely good to see you guys. I love you guys. So God bless you all. Have a great night, and we'll see you all over the top.
All right. We're here on MLK Day. Which was actually yesterday, his birthday. But it's a bank holiday, federal holiday, today, Monday. So happy MLK Day. But the question, I've got two questions of the day here on MLK Day, which I don't think people are going to look at it like I'm looking at it. But here are the two questions. Question number one, particularly if you have children, are your children making you rich? That's question number one. And number two question is, are you making your family rich? Now, what's this got to do with MLK Day, Martin Luther King Day? Well, Martin Luther King, now, he was assassinated, I think I was like in third grade, 8 years old, something like that. And my mother, because I lived in D.C., so there was riots in that city. So she pulled me out of school, and she was a nurse. So she saw the results of that upheaval at the emergency room every night. So she pulled me out of school for until he was, entombed or buried. So in any event, but Martin Luther King's, one of his platforms when he was alive, he did what, poor people marches, or not, maybe not all of them for poor people, but that was his thing, you know, poor people. And let's see, maybe shortly within the year of him, his assassination, they had some people marched to D.C., and they had a thing down in Washington Mall called Resurrection City, where people camped out. My mother took me down there and whatnot. It was a rainy day. It was very muddy down there when we went down there. But anyway, that was interesting. But so, and I guess this title came in. I was talking to somebody, and he was telling me, and this is what I came with, what these two questions. You know, most people, not all, but most people in many cultures, not all cultures, but many cultures, you know, you raise your children, you educate your children to get a job, and that job typically that they get is making someone other than you rich. Sam Walton, Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, et cetera, et cetera. They have a whole bunch of people working for them that are not working and making them rich. But those same people, for the most part, are not working to make their family rich with the same skills. Now, in the Amish community on a critical mass basis, in the Mennonite community on a critical mass basis, and many parts of the Jewish community globally on a critical mass basis, you have children who are conditioned from the cradle, educated from the cradle to work for the family business. Now, they might end up, you know, being a rocket scientist for NASA or doing something totally different, but the mindset is there. And if anything goes wrong with whatever endeavor they might go through, a path that they might have in life, then the good old family business is still operating. So, now, like I say, this isn't for, I mean, like I say, they're, you know, most people, you know, because a lot of times you need outside help, but if you look at, if you're going to a, well, it depends on what part of the country you're in, so. A lot of the liquor stores that you might run and go into are family-based businesses. You know, I think a real good illustration would be a Chinese carryout. Now, a Chinese carryout, at least the ones I've consistently gone into in various parts of the world. There's only one place I went to, but it wasn't Chinese. It was owned by Asians. So, but anyway. Typically Chinese restaurant, they're family-run businesses, and typically the ones that I've gone inside and ordered stuff, you see different generations. You see small kids, you know, parents and grandparents. It's a family-run business. Now, if you look at, and some of you who might have a Chinese menu, Chinese restaurant menu, go fetch one if you got one in your house already. And open up their menu and then count the number of items that they sell. And if you count them up, you're going to get anywhere from 200 to 300 items. Shrimp fried rice, egg roll, spring roll, sesame chicken, sweet and sour chicken, ribs, shredded ribs, different types of, I mean, egg foo youngs, pork egg foo young, you know, 200 to 300 items. Each and every one of those items, okay, essentially are profit centers. Those are 200 to 300, whatever number that is on that menu, those are 200 to 300 ways that that family can earn money that day. All right, lunch specials. The list could go on and on and on. I keep on talking. I might end up ordering. Because on MLK Day, they deliver. And they have lunch specials practically anywhere you go. So, but it's, and on average, in the United States, the average Chinese food carryout, you know, and we're not talking, you know, this is a carryout. Takes in about $1,100,000 a year on average. But those are family-based businesses. Then you also have, you know, some Arabs or some Asians or anybody actually that might own a gas station. And that gas station, if they don't do auto mechanic work, they might be a food mart. Food mart, quickie mart, whatever you call it in your neck of the woods, where you can go, and they might have two or three hundred items in there, from a loaf of bread to ice cream to condiments to ice to beer, frozen foods, donuts, candies of different assortments, hot dogs, slices of pizza, buffalo wings. Let's skip over to convenience stores, the same thing. A lot of those are family-based businesses. So the question here on MLK Day, which I don't know if Martin Luther King, I haven't heard all his speeches, but are your kids making you rich, and are you making your family rich? Because with the Jewish phenomenon, which isn't restricted to, it's a fundamental principle. That's just the name of the book, The Jewish Phenomenon. It can apply to anybody, of any color, race, religion, it doesn't matter. You can be atheist, but it doesn't matter. It's when one person makes money, five make. So, you know, families have different sizes. You know, some families have two or three people. You know, some have. I was reading about some guy over in East Africa. He's got, like 12 wives? Either 12 wives or, I'm going to say 12 wives. He's either 12 wives or 21 wives. It's hard for me to keep up with that. Anyway, he's got at least 12 wives, probably about 100 children, and then he's got over 500 grandchildren. Reminds me of a Pick Meek Markham piece. I'm gonna play it for you guys. When I gotta find it and load it up first. I just thought about it, but in any event, and I'm figuring these 12 women with all these kids with him, he has some type of system to sustain all those. You know, they all live. I mean, he's got his own tribe. You know, so. I'm figuring he's got a system where, you know, his family wealth, they put those kids to work. I mean, imagine if you had, like I said, the guy's got at least 100 children. We're going to study him this week. But put it this way, I know if I had 10 kids of my own right now, I have a job for each and every one of them, but I don't. So I don't have any children. So anyway, question day on MLK Day, in response to his Poor People's March, because I never heard him mention this particular strategy. He could have, but I haven't heard of it. But are you raising your kids so that your kids will make you rich instead of making someone else rich? It seems like it's a normal thing to do. Now, granted, everybody comes to the planet with their own purpose and life mission and all this, that, or the other. But while you got control of them before they get to those teen years, you could train them where, I mean, if you got a liquor store that's stocking inventory, you know, if you got a McDonald's franchise or whatever, then they're working on the fry machine. And they're selling so many fries per day or per hour. So are your kids making you rich if you have them? And then are you making your family rich? And I'm going to use the Amish economics or the Mennonite economics, and this applies in any culture. It's on dad. I mean, they have a family business or family businesses. The dad might have a carpentry or woodworking business where he makes furniture, cabins, log cabins, tiny houses, et cetera, et cetera. And then you have the wife, she, and the sons are in the business and might have two sons. One son, his forte is he does the tiny house part. And then the wife might do, she might have a bakery and a restaurant. So her and one daughter or son, or a combination thereof, they work the restaurant part. The other one might be doing the bakery part, making shoe fly pies or no-bake cheesecakes or whatever they do. And then they might have a flea market, a family store. This is all within one family. I know a family that I deal with on a monthly basis. It's about maybe six or seven at best, including the son-in-law. I'm not including grandchildren or anything like that, but about six to seven of them. And they've got, oh, man, probably they've done over 10,000 transactions when it comes to land. So every month, they're getting at least 10,000 paychecks that come in from various people who they've helped buy land. Now, it took them a while to get to that 10,000-plus figure, but still, it started with one guy and his wife, and as they had kids, they brought the children up in the business, and all the children, except for maybe one, went to college and then majored in something that was in a topic that was, in this case, real estate, connected to the family business. And then after they graduated from college, actually, matter of fact, even before they graduated from college, they were in the family business during the college years, high school years. So that's what they do as a career. Now, the dad who started the business, he's retired, and he's got his children who are adults now. They run that business of, I don't know, they might be up to maybe 20,000 plus paychecks coming in a month from people just, you know, mailing them mortgage payments. So, so this man made his family rich, and now his children are making him richer. That's the one thing, one of the big takeaways I get out of Donald Trump's presidency. And Donald Trump's a polarizing figure, as we all know. But what I looked at was the family part. It started with Fred C. Trump, his dad. He became a carpenter, started to learn carpentry at 15. He learned how to build houses. He had two cookie-cutter houses, one for $3,999, the other one for $4,999. But he built and sold those two basic cookie cutters. He did that over 27,000 times. And then he bought up all his kids in that, but Donald Trump was the more developed. He's got one, I think, a sister who's a judge and all that. But then Donald took it to another level with high-end hotels and whatnot. So when Trump becomes president, because Trump wasn't a professional politician, and I'm not pro or con Trump. I'm just telling you, I'm looking at this, two questions. Are your kids making you rich, and are you making your family in that context? I'm thinking about pictures of Trump in the White House with his children and his grandchildren, because his grandchildren are being groomed. Because one of the things that Trump learned from his dad, and then Trump used it to his advantage as well, is if you're going to get to a certain level of wealth, you're going to have to be politically active, as in the piece I played by Claude Anderson, Every Day with the Five Stories. So his little children, some of them might be wearing underoos still. I don't know. But while they're wearing underoos, okay, and watching cartoons, whatever they watch on TV, whatever devices they have these days, they are being groomed. So by the time they're 15, you know, a lot of people, by the time they're 15, you get your learner's permit, and then 16, you get your driver's license. And other families or people from merchant cultures, and I would say the Trump family are merchants, and their circle of people are merchants. They're teaching their children by the time they're 15, they know how to operate the family business that takes in millions of dollars a year. So I think the easiest study of this would be, like I say, the Chinese, with the, you know, Chinese restaurants, because those are basically family-run businesses. But you can take a franchise, McDonald's, Subway, Burger King, and typically the people who work in a franchise business, you know, McDonald's, Burger King, whatever, Arby's, Popeye's Chicken, Kentucky Fried, whatever it might be. Those, everybody who works in there, typically, if you're not related to the owner of the business, then those children or those people, because a lot of those people are grown people, those people are making someone else's family rich instead of making their own family rich, unless you're using that business, that job, as a side hustle to make your own family rich. Anyway, that's my way of looking at MLK Day. Anyway, it's open mics. Anything you guys want to talk about? It's a holiday day today, so, you know, anything you guys want to talk about. 309, your mic is open.
Good morning. Man, I'm really liking, good morning, you know, the discussion you were having here about, you know, the family taking care of the family, but it isn't something that is typically done in, you know, 90% of the families throughout America. Other countries,
correct,
like you said, do look at that. And the family unity all the way to the grandparents, you know, are involved, even when they come here and buy hotels, because they do take care of their elderly, and their elderly, as long as they stay active, they live long. And
right,
they include them. So
you're right.
You know, I think the inclusion is something we're lacking in society today. And, you know, today is MLK Day. And, you know, his I Have a Dream speech, you know, I feel that we're trying to live that right now. You know, every day when we do it, we try to empower that I Have a Dream speech, because it's all of you having a dream out there, but it's are you really doing anything about the dreams that you're having? You know, we're talking about people that actually do things. They groom their kids to be successful, but you know, at the same time, you have to realize that even those rich families, they're not functional, they're dysfunctional, because they all,
right,
have problems. And you know, so we're not like putting them on a pedestal saying, hey, this family's going to do good just because they're going to do good. No, they're going to have kids that's going to have drug problems. And it goes with that, you know, without saying on anything. Because people make choices on their own. It doesn't matter how much money you got. And if you got more money, maybe you got more opportunity to mess up. Instead of escaping from reality, you're trying to join somebody else's fun.
Right.
So yeah, you know, I think we need to get our kids' interest instead of saying, hey, go watch television, or go play your game. Say, hey, what's the plan for tomorrow? You know, and let them start planning for their future, because when they're born, they instantly cost money, so they need to make money. So we need to work with our children from birth, because they are pure love. But if we instill and just enrich that love and show them that they can grow from right there being prosperous as they, and helping others do the same, man, I think we can really change the next generation coming out, but also change the generations that we're in right now, who we came from, because it's something we haven't seen either.
All right. I'm going to tell you like a real simple business that that is, I mean, prevalent in the Amish and Mennonite community, something that we've all done, that's landscaping. Everybody's cut, you know, particularly male boys coming up, they've cut the family, you know, the lawn. Cut the grass, all right? And maybe your parents, you know, paid you something to do it. But within the Amish and Mennonite community, they've taken it, they've scaled that, all right, well, no, don't stop with the family lawn. Go out and get some customers
right
out into the community with a landscaping business. You know, some of those things taking like $25,000 a month, cutting grass.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, that's a simple family business.
You know, when I was a kid, I was 14 years old, and I went out to all the trailer parks in my city. And for $10, I'd mow your grass. For $15, I'd weed eat it too. It didn't need weed eating every time it was cut. So they would like do every other or something. And I went out and I got these grown men, and I paid them minimum wage, put their lawnmower in my girlfriend's car, drop them off at a trailer park, hand them a list, and they could mow 6 yards an hour. And I'd tell them, how many hours you want to be here? 5 or 6, you know. They'd work 2 days a week. I would go collect money once a week. But they'd work 6 hours. I'd pay them $3.35 an hour. And I'd give them a minimum of $20. Now, they, you know, that was money back then. But
right,
at the same time, if you do the math, and I got 6 yards an hour at $10 a yard, and he worked for 5 hours, then you're looking at me collecting $300.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the difference was. You know, I was a kid with an entrepreneurial mindset. But I didn't go mow those yards. I made sure that they got mowed, but I would go collect the money once a week. And I was collecting about $1,000 a week at 14 years old, and I didn't mow a yard. So
that's good money for a 14-year-old today. That's good for a 14-year-old today. That's excellent. Well, it's something as simple as that. The example that you just gave is something that simple. And the key is, particularly if you have children, get them before they get to those teen years, where it's not what you like to do. No, this is what you're doing. Because by the time they become teenagers, they develop their own interest in all this other stuff, so it's kind of hard to. But if you get them, you know, when they're, I hate to use the word controllable, but no, you're doing this. 8, 9, whatever
the
task might
be. Right now. We've got a model like that. It's in L.A. right now, kindergarten through 8th grade. And we're fixing to integrate a few other programs to it. But the entrepreneurial thing is going to be there, because if they can create product, and it's just like a blueprint, you know, if they design a blueprint and that house gets done, that blueprint, kids own that design. And anybody that wants to use that design has to buy it from them. So that's kind of what this is. And it'd be a way that it can go on forever. You know, they just could get residuals just from something they do in an afternoon. But we are definitely looking at how we can show them how to be responsible with money, but also, you know, have something that we've never had before, an opportunity to do something like this without you going out on your own and not necessarily having the support of the community.
Right. Right. Well, that's hopefully we'll get more people on it. I'm going to bring this topic up on a regular basis, you know, just throw the questions out there. Are your children making you rich, or you're making your family rich? So we can spark some people. Like I say, it's easier to do it when the children are younger. It's easier to get somebody to do it at 12 versus 21. 21, they might start having their own kids. So, and then depends on the mindset. You know, if they're 21 and they start having their own kids, they might need a way to, you know, what happens with a lot of people with child support, and this is my theory on this, is they're looking, some guys who haven't been able to make those child support payments because they have been psychologically conditioned to go out and work for somebody else. Whereas if they either started a business, gaping, housekeeping, something simple, or if they don't have a family, or they don't come from a family that has a business, then psychologically, you know, you might be out there spending wills for quite a while. I think that, but if you can introduce them to the mindset of, wait a minute, it might be easier for me to start some type of business based on a service. Okay, based on a service. You know, if you're going to do landscaping, okay, even if you don't have a lawnmower or a weed eater or, you know, hedging tools and all that, you might know somebody, you might have a friend if you got the social capital, that will loan you a lawnmower or a weed eater. Or you can go to a hardware store. Now, I don't know if Home Depot or Lowe's or Menards, I know those three rent out equipment. I don't know if they do lawnmowers, but I know the old school hardware stores, not all of them, but many of them did, you know, if you need to rent a lawnmower or something like that, you go there, rent a lawnmower, and do what you got to do, cut some lawns or whatever, and then bring it back.
So, they have they have rental companies now that do it, and you can get a professional zero-turn mower and go mow grass with it, and they'll charge. You can rent it by the day, by the week, by the month.
There you go. That's the solution. So, you know, we're going to do a child support series on this because a lot of people just, once again, in my opinion, they're psychologically looking outside of themselves instead of looking within the world. What can I do? And like I say, if you provide a service, it could be lawn care, it could be housekeeping, it could be moving furniture. There's a whole lot out there that you can, don't need virtually almost no money. I mean, if you got a phone or not even a phone, if you have access to the internet and that's at a public library, you can probably go place a free ad on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace or something like that and just, you know, get going or open up a Facebook page with that particular service and then start getting some clients. You know, YouTube, open up, get a YouTube channel for free And see, I'm sure there's somebody on there that says I cut grass or I do housekeeping. There are people on YouTube that are house sitters. They're professional house sitters. They will come if you go on vacation or something like that. They will sit, you know, they'll stay at your home, keep everything in order, you know, while you're gone, and they'll pay you. They'll pay you for that. They're professional house sitters out there now. So there's a lot out there to explore. 773, your mic is open.
Yes, good morning. Following
good
up
morning.
On track to what we're talking about, and I know this from my own study and research, the Jewish phenomenon, that's exactly what they do. They start training their children from the diaper, if you want to say that. The Mennonites, all these people, those people that have generational wealth, they do not wait till those kids go through high school and get 21 and then start trying to get them involved in the business. They start that out as day one. That's what they do. They bring their children up in their culture, in their profession, and they do not teach them to go out and get a job. They don't teach that. They teach them to have their own businesses, professions. So this is not some option with them. If you go back and check out this phenomenon that we just talked about that you played, that's not something that guy picked up at 21. He was taught that. He was trained that. And that's what those people who have that kind of success, that generational wealth, they started out as children. The Ford, the Rockefellers, the name all of them, that's what they teach their children. Thank you.
You're absolutely right. The royal family out of England, now that's a good example. The royal family out of England, for generation after generation, they teach those people about government, the family history, about the throne. They're educated on that from birth. I mean, King,
right.
what's his name? King Charles, over in England right now, he was trained from birth. For how old is he? He's in his 70s, I guess.
Yeah, he's up there. Yeah, he's up there.
Yeah, yep. 70s. I don't know if he's 80, but he could be 80. Anyway, but he, until his mother passed, he was in training. Let me look at this dude's birthday. Okay, Prince Charles. King Charles, excuse me. King Charles III, okay. King Charles III of England, he is age 70, he's 74. He trained for 73 years.
Yep.
To take over the reins.
That's right.
That's a long time in school, but that's his mindset, and then his children. You know, he's got William is right behind him, and a lot of pictures that you see, I see a lot of them together. But William, his son, his eldest son, was in training from the crib. Now Harry, he's second, but he stepped away from it, but. Of course, King Charles III, he has grandchildren because Prince William, he has children. And those children, they're in training already. But now you don't have to be in England or part of that type of royal family. This can be done in any ordinary family. You want to keep the family house because I got a couple of Clubhouse channels, which I got to start doing, opening up those rooms. Don't sell mama's house and don't sell grandma's house. That's all we can throw in grandpa's house, too. That's all about not selling the family home. If you make your children or grandchildren a part of it, the responsibilities of a house from the time you bring them into the world.
What about this scripture? A good man leaves inheritance for his children's children. That's third generational.
Right.
That's not just something that happens. That's trained. That's what they are trained to do. You don't do reverse mortgages. You don't do that.
Right. Right.
It's to be passed on down from generational wealth.
You know what? I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought it up because I plan on doing some workshops offline with this whole reverse mortgage stuff. You're absolutely right. And that scripture, matter of fact, hold that. Let me take out my notes. Give me that scripture.
It's Proverbs. I forgot where it is. I wasn't looking at it. I just quoted. But it says, a good man leaves inheritance for his children's children. That's the quote.
Okay.
Of course, the man is that's generic. It's male, female. But the point is, that's what you do to maintain generational wealth, or I think they call it dynasty wealth. It's trained to be passed on down the line. Teach those children. That's your. That's you grow up to maintain this.
Right. And I'm glad you brought it up because, and I'm going to look up that. All right, I got it in my notes. Now, all those, let me point out this on MLK Day. MLK and his wife, Coretta Scott King, had four children. The eldest out of those four, I think Yolanda, she passed away some years ago. So he's got three. He's got MLK the third. He's alive. He's a parent. I think he has a daughter. And then you have Dexter King. I don't know if he's married or has kids. And then you have, what's the youngest King kid? She's in the pulpit herself. She's a pastor, I believe. Now, and she's the youngest out of the bunch. Now, the MLK and Coretta Scott King, good parents, excellent parents, well-educated. They educated their children. But the one thing that they were kind of slipping on, from optically speaking, because I didn't know these people. I don't know their business like that. But optically speaking was they didn't train their children when it comes to estate planning and or the scripture that you just mentioned, Delmar. Because they have taken each other to court five times over the estate of their dad. The two elder brothers wanted to sell some of the things that their father left behind, like the Bible that Barack Obama was sworn in on the first time he was sworn in as president of the United States. That particular Bible, a family heirloom, the two eldest brothers, MLK the third and Dexter, they wanted that Bible sold. Obviously, they wanted to collect millions of dollars for it. However, the youngest child of King and his wife, Coretta Scott King, said, no, it's priceless. It needs to stay in the family. I don't know if they've resolved that particular issue, but they've taken each other to court five times over that and some other things. Now, going from the scripture that you just read, Delmar, if, and once again, I don't know Martin Luther King. I didn't know him. I'm not in their family business all like that. But I'm just thinking optically, had his wife and or MLK taught their children estate planning from a very young age, those court battles never would have been fought. Never would have been an issue.
Hey, LA. I think we got amazing Alice in the queue in a 305 area code, maybe.
Okay, hold on. Let me go to my phone bank here. Oh, let me, all right, hold on, let me get to that.
And that scripture's 13:32.
You say what now?
That scripture's Proverbs 13:22.
Okay. All right, 13:22. Okay, 13:22. All right, hold on. I'm trying to let my studio on my phone repopulate here.
And while you are doing that, keep in mind.
Okay, yeah, we got a 305. Go ahead, Delmon, before I get on 305. Yeah.
Yeah, keep in mind that our cultural history is different from most people in other countries. I mean, remember, we still have a gap in our tradition. I mean, the legacy of slavery has created a poverty history that is still being repeated. So like you say, they don't have a third generation that taught them that. They can't go back to 100 years before and say, this is what our parents taught us. So they didn't have those options. It wasn't there.
Touche.
So there's some who do.
Touche. You're absolutely right. Touche on that one. Because the example I used with King Charles III's family, man, we can go back practically 1,000 years on that. The system that they developed today, they didn't develop it overnight or in one or two or three or four generations. That was developed over hundreds of years.
That's right.
So,
and with the Jews, I was this program I watched last night on YouTube. The Jews, they take history back 4,000 years of what they teach. 4,000 years teaching them.
That's a lot of years.
That's a whole lot different from one generation, 100 years out of slavery.
You know
that's
what?
A whole lot of difference.
Delmar, I'm glad you brought that up because we're going to be using that at least once a month, those teachings, and plus do some offline, because there's an abyss. I mean, a huge, like as deep as the ocean, there's an abyss of information that is not present culturally in some cultures within the United States, around the world, actually.
Exactly.
But
right.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Martin Luther King's bloodline, more than likely, he had nothing to go with. Because
and
his wife, they were high on education now, you know, with master's degrees and PhDs and all that. But that's the academic side, okay? But when we're talking about preserving family wealth, going back to King Charles can go back at least 1,000 years.
Yes.
At least, you know,
that monarch, as they call it, that monarch dates back. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. That does make a big difference. Let's see. Area code 305. Your mic is open. Area code 305.
I'm sorry. I'm muting it now.
No. Don't mute it. Unmute.
Oh, I thought you was hearing what was in the background. I'm so sorry.
No. You had a comment.
I do. What you guys are saying is so beautiful, and I was wondering how can my organization partner with you guys so we can get more of what you're doing out there.
Well, if you know Chris, that's the main thing right there, so we can partner. Now, you're what, 305, you're down in Miami?
Yes, I have a nonprofit organization that just gave birth in December of 2022 in Miami, but I'm also out of Georgia, so we are in Georgia and in Miami now.
Okay, well, just off the top of my head, and Delmar's in Chicago and Tennessee. We can do a powwow, you know, offline. I don't know if you're on Clubhouse or anything like that, but, with a mutual contact is Chris Collins.
Well.
Okay, so we can do a powwow with Chris on Clubhouse. Not today, but probably sometime this week. And,
yes, sir.
Put together a collaborate. Now, explain more about you and what your nonprofit's all about. Put that out there.
Okay, so my nonprofit is all about the youth. This first one is called the House of Divine Hope Incorporated.
Uh-huh.
So it's to give our youth hope, right? Because there was a lot of things that happened to me in my life that nobody understood what was actually happening. And now that I took myself to court and I was able to change my name, so my legal name is now Awesome Amazing Alice D. Fagans, and we are now a corporation. And we want to bring hope to our youth and build a youth center with them in mind, meaning they help us build it. So that, because people always say if you build it, they will come. But the Holy Spirit says, but if they help build it, they'll stay. So we want to give the youth a reason to stick around and change their mindsets about all of the things that the world is teaching them, and teach them divine integrity, empathy, compassion, forgiveness, things of that nature. We have classes that we literally teach, leadership classes, that literally teaches leadership outside of the, we take the stories of the leaders in the Bible and we put them with our real life, and we actually have them living out their characters while they're here to show positive things about themselves. Because if nobody is speaking positivity into them, or they don't see it, the children are going to do what they see. So we want to help change what they see so they can actually become what they were meant to be in the first place. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Wait a minute. Now, you said something. You got to repeat this back. You done brought up a podcast. We're going to have you back for this one and do something offline, too. You said something, I'm paraphrasing. If they build it, they will come, but if they help build it, they will stay. Now, is that a quote? Is that your quote, or can we look that up somewhere?
That's what the Holy Spirit gave to me. That's what the Holy Spirit said. Because
well, that's good
enough
for me.
Hold on to it.
Hold on to that, because I wrote that one down. If they help build it, Chris, thank man, Chris, you done gave me my Christmas present already. This is January. I'm not talking about 2023. I ain't talking about 2022. Man, that nailed it on the head right there. If they help build it, they will stay. Not today for me, but because Chris. Anyway, Chris got my whole clubhouse thing.
Okay.
Chris set that up for tomorrow or whatever the time this week, and I'll be there for that conference. And then Delmar, I'll share with Delmar too. But yeah, that you done hit the nail on the head with that one.
I appreciate it.
If they help build it, they will stay.
Yeah.
And Delmar,
there,
that's gotta be part
too.
Of what the King's family over in England. The monarchy, that's why a lot of them stay, because they help build it. And they add on, generation after generation, they keep on adding on.
Well, go ahead. Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, that's the motto behind, if we engage with our children, and they build the cities of the future, they will not tear it down. But the one thing about it is they're going to build something that won't burn. And this is
right.
Key, because Mother Nature will take it down,
I like it.
You know.
Yeah.
But letting them construct something, just like the erector sets that we used when we were children, that can be taken apart and rebuilt into something else. It can continue to evolve as they
yes.
evolve. And
yes.
it'll last 1,000 years, you know. This
yes.
is that legacy building situation that will live on forever. And the thing is they won't have to try to leave this planet to stay alive, to keep the human race moving, if they can actually turn around the problems that we have caused by using the technology of today and changing the way that we're going to have and see what we're going to do here in the future. So our kids, you know, they need to know that they're the human race, they're human beings, and they're going to be being human, okay? That being human is the key thing behind what you need to know about yourself. Because the palm of your hand is pink, and you put a gun of reconstruction instead of mass destruction in their hand, we can have peace on earth, because you're not alone. You're not helpless and you're not hopeless. And that's one thing that everybody needs to understand.
Amen.
Okay, Delvon?
Yeah, I would say, if you watch any of the tapes on the Mennonites or the Amish people, you see them, those kids out there milking those animals, doing those things from childhood. They out there every day, following their parents around. Again, it's programmed into them, trained as children. That's why they give up what the sister just said. They help maintain their lifestyle. They're the ones who's building it. Like Chris said, they're just renewing it, resetting it generation after generation. That's why they don't leave it.
All right. Now, 305, what's your first name again?
My first name is Awesome. So my name, my entire name is Awesome. Yes, it's Awesome Amazing Alice D. Fagans. That's my legal name.
Amen.
Awesome Alice.
Yep, Awesome Alice.
I'm
telling you is we have 12 nonprofits. There are 12 nonprofits and 3 for profits. But when we sent it to the courts, we let them know that those were kingdoms. So we have the drawings, we have the blueprints, we have everything. We took it to the courts, and they have said they found no deception in what we were building for our youth. We have a center for elders. We have a prison. We have, I promise you, we have everything. We just needed partners that believe in the same thing so that we can go ahead and start building and getting everybody cleaned out internally, because they have to have a spiritual regurgitation. And
right.
It only comes from people who literally went through what the kids are going through. That's who they're going to understand, because they're going to know that you're real. So I went transparently. I took my whole entire life to court, because I'm an ex-convict who served 5.5 years in prison. But every single time, God showed up. So my testimony is like the Jubilees. Mine is 365 days so that they can walk with me, so that they can see everything I've already been through, and God has found me not guilty because I'm washed in his blood. And I'm able to come back and go all the way back to get my 5-year-old self to tell her that it's okay, because I grew up believing that I was a boy trapped in a girl's body. I'm 53 years old right now, and it wasn't until I got baptized in 2021 that I've been single. Right? And now I'm learning about the Proverbs woman of 31:10-31. So that's who I am becoming. And our young ladies need to hear that, because nobody is telling them about the Proverbs woman. They only hear about, you know, prostitution, you know, all of the negative things. But now I'm learning to listen, and my heart is listening. And so now I'm being matured. And now I can speak to those things without being negative, but for them to be able to see that's not the life that God intended for me to live forever. And I'm just going to digress with that right there.
Woo! Well,
you
named yourself right. Awesome Alice. Awesome. You know, you guys have put out, you know what, I'm going to conclude the program, today's program, because anything else, I don't think anything else could be said. The information that you guys have shared, including, I'm looking at, like, if they build it, they will stay. Man, that's part of my business model now. So, Delmar, you want to have the last word or what?
Well, again, everything that has been said that is true has always been true, but the Prince of Darkness has kept it from people, and we have the opportunity, and it's already being done. Chris, you got the mall. Alice, you got the mall. Awesome. We just need to follow through and do it. It will last. It will stay. Oh,
yes.
Yes. You're right. You're absolutely
okay,
right. Well, on that note, thank you, Alice.
Okay,
thanks, big thanks to all of
you.
Nothing can be topped on it. Alice, look.
Yes, sir.
I want you to come in tomorrow morning at, we're on the same, because I'm in Lakeland, Florida right now.
Okay.
I want you to come on as the guest tomorrow morning at 10:30 a.m.
I will be there.
Same number that you called in, and then I want to, tomorrow's podcast is if they build it, if they help build it, they will stay. I'm putting a needle in that one, a nail in
please
that
do.
One.
Please
that,
do.
That's where we, you know, we got everything we need right there. Del Mar, everybody's on here. Come back tomorrow morning. But Austin Malice, you know what? I got it. I can't even find the words. So on that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.
Okay, God bless. Thank you.